On this episode of The Flatus Show, number 43, Gnosticism Part 2, with a parable. I also reveal a dark secret I've kept for years, and I write a letter to the editor of the Gloucester Daily Times. This and more. The Flatus Show, starring Kenty and Jose. To the Flatus Show is my tab for my diet, and Jose's sitting right here on my lap in this wonderful episode of the Flatus Show. I'm Kenty. Jose's my little poodle here. He helps me with the show. You can reach me at kenty@theflatusshow.com, or you can call me at 206-339-JOSE. And leave me a message. Just let me know I can use it on the air, and I certainly will do that. Last year, I was talking at the Frapper Map, and I have one person who signed up newly, Darren from Gainesville, Florida. Welcome, Darren. We also lost Robert. So let's bow our heads in silence as Robert of Phoenix has left the building. He's shopping at Bloomingdale's. That's what we're going to say when people leave the Flatus Show. Andy Warhol said that about his mother. When his mother died, people would ask, "Where's your mother?" "She's shopping at Bloomingdale's." So, Robert is shopping at Bloomingdale's. Oh, he left the Flatus Show. Okay, Podcast Alley, I didn't get any more votes. But I'm 1,103, which is higher than I thought I would ever be in the audio blog category. Oh! So, welcome to the Flatus Show. Little Jose, what you get? He's little Jose has ants in his pants. He's hear him? Say something, honey. Say something. Say something. Growl or something. Say something. Biscuit. Want a biscuit. Biscuit. Want a biscuit. Jose? Say something. Say something. He's a silent dog, but you know what? He really isn't a silent dog because he makes such loud noises when we come home. Put him down here. Littlest dog. You hear him? And we also, John and I, also have adopted a cat. I guess it's official. We're going to keep him. His name is Tuffy, and he's also, we also call him Tuffy Tunafish. He was born in a barn. His owner had him for 10 years, and then the guy who owned him left and stuck the cat back in the barn. Cat didn't know what he was doing. Our neighbor found him, and she was going to keep him, but her cat, who's 15, did not like the new cat. So we tried him out for the last 2-3 weeks now, and he is doing pretty good. He's lying down right now. He's actually in my room. So welcome to the Flatus Show. Let's see what else I'm going to talk about here. Okay, Easter seals. Oh, let me tell you about Easter seals. My company where I work for is doing the walk, which I'm going to do the walk. But I need to raise money. But what I want you to do is I'll have the link on my web, on the notes, is to go to the Easter seals. It's I can't even tell you what it is. HTTP, you all know that crap, right? It's ma.easterseals.com. So go there, click on the donate, and when it says, at the bottom it says, do you want to add another name? Like, you know, I'm Tom, and I'm donating money to the Easter seals. But you're also going to put my name in there, and then send me something to show that you what you have donated so I can keep track of it. So when I go to the walk, I can say, this is the money I raised, and that's why I'm walking. So I hope to raise a lot of money. One reason why, I've never really thought too much about Easter seals, but the Easter seals people came to the place where I work, the workplace, gave us a pizza lunch. And they brought some people who actually one person who gets benefits from this. His name is Drew. He was 13. sweet kid. And he is going to Kigo's the camp. The money that we raise in Easter Seals that pays for this kid to go to the camp. Him and his brother. His brother is blind. Both he and his brother have feeding tubes. They have to be very careful. This kid is so full of life. Is so sweet that it just touched my heart. I mean, this whole... my heart has been wide open like a... My heart has been like a wound that does not heal since Easter. But it's a good thing. It's a good thing. It's a feeling of being alive, of being part of humanity. And Drew deserves to go to this camp. He deserves... He will have a good life. He has such a great attitude. But I want to raise money for Easter Seals. I want to do the walk. Even if I didn't do the walk, I want you to donate. I really want my listeners to donate. You know, give $10 or whatever. That's nothing. I will. And I'll probably give more than $10. So that's that. How can I say that? Maybe what I'll do is I'll donate something. I'll ask you to match it. I'll have to find out what I can afford. And then I'm going to ask you to match it. raise money for Drew. It's just will touch your heart. You should go to your... I mean, this is in Massachusetts, and of course I'm doing the walk. And I know all my listeners are from all over the place. I mean, my newest listener, or the listener who signed the Frapper map the last person to sign the Frapper map, Darren, he's from Florida, and I know the podcaster Randy's in Washington, so... If you don't want to donate to the Massachusetts one, that's fine. But donate to your local Easter Seals. Because, you know, Drew lives in Massachusetts or somewhere in the local area. And you have kids in your area. So it's important that we take care of them. All kids. Now, I'll talk about later on about the use of the word fag. Which is really a hate-filled word. And you really should be careful about who you're using that around. I mean, I use fag around adults. But even I shouldn't use the word. It's a bad word to use. It's just hate-filled. And I'm going to start changing my ways when it comes to that. You know, it can be really hurtful, as you'll find out. Thirdly, Jose, what are you doing? Hold on, let me let him out. You want to go out, honey? You want to go out? He's going into the other room. Okay. Happy birthday. Happy birthday is in order for William Shakespeare, who's been dead for, I don't know, 400 years or so. 450 years. No, 500 years. And Wanda Wisdom. So happy birthday, Wanda Wisdom. And Sandra Dee. Though I'm not sure if Sandra Dee is alive anymore. But, well, you know, happy birthday to all of you. This is really interesting because Wanda Wisdom, there's a picture of Wanda Wisdom on Eat This Hot Show. And this picture of her, it looks exactly like Sandra Dee in the movie Imitation of Life. So I think Wanda Wisdom is the reincarnation of Sandra Dee. I really do. They look so much alike. I swear to God, they could be twins. So, enough of this, and on with the show. Here's a song I perform. The song is by Michael Herron from Mikey Pot in the Bayou. It's called Here, and I perform it with a ukulele as my accompaniment. I see the writing on a different wall. These toothless wishes, these sweet impressions, and every jump is closer to a fall. Is this September, or just October, or am I falling here forever? Tomorrow now or something keeps me distant. I stay awake and keep this in it. And I'm never ever disappointed.
and never looking out into the distance, never talking or keeping quiet. So I'm here, solidly in between. So I'm here, keep me from everything. Keep me from everything. If these are all the words I'm after, God give me something to remember.
Gnosticism, part two. Okay, last week I spoke about the Gospel of Judas. And if you remember, with Judas, of the disciples, Judas knew that Christ had this divine spark in him, and Christ asked Judas to betray him so he could be crucified so his soul, divine spark, could go back up to heaven. Which is, I don't subscribe to that part of Gnosticism, getting rid of your body, but the idea of the divine spark is interesting. Now, in that type of thinking, the divine spark is in some people, but not all people. And how this is sort of similar to parts of Christianity, or similar to Christianity, I'll say, is that in Christianity, the Holy Spirit enters you at baptism when you accept Christ. That's apparently, I was reading this, I thought that was interesting, where I think in Gnosticism, that divine spark is there at birth. Perhaps what it is that everybody has a chance for this divine spark to grow in them, but sometimes it dies. And this brings me to a famous parable that Jesus said. He wrote it, or he said it. It's called The Parable of the Sower and the Seed, which I'm going to read. It's from Matthew 13, 1 through 9, I guess. On that day went Jesus out of the house and sat by the seaside. And there were gathered unto him great multitudes, so that he entered into a boat and sat, and all the multitudes stood on the beach. And he spake to them many things in parables, saying, Behold, the sower went forth to sow, and as he sowed, some seeds fell by the wayside, and the birds came and devoured them. And others fell upon the rocky places, where they had not much earth, and straightway they sprang up, because they had no deepness of earth. And when the sun was risen, they were scorched. And because they had no root, they withered away. And others fell upon the thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. And others fell upon the ground. And others fell upon the good ground and yielded fruit, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. He that hath ears, let him hear. It goes on to say, And the disciples came and said unto him, Why speakest thou unto them in parables? And he answered and said unto them, Unto you it is given to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. For whosoever hath, to him shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But whosoever hath not, from him shall be taken away, even that which he hath. Therefore speak I to them in parables, because seeing they see not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand, and unto them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which saith. Okay. This, I was thinking about this in a couple ways. Okay. This goes to speak that this passage here actually gives me evidence that the Gospel of Judas really did happen. Maybe it did happen that way. Because the disciples say to him, Why are you speaking in parables? As in, we do not understand what you're saying. Right? But Christ says, Unto you it is given to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. But to them it is not given. You, that whole sentence, who is the you? And that you would be Judas, because Christ, in the Gospel of Judas, Christ knew
that Judas knew, but the others did not know. The other disciple did not know. So, that's what I was thinking. Now, the sowing of the seeds, I was also thinking of something about different types of faith. Now, this brings me to talk about the Pepe podcast. In his latest podcast, 32, he interviews Melanie Orndorff. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. But anyway, she was a Quaker. She was raised as a Quaker. And what Quakers do, I understand, is that they gather at a meeting place, a meeting house, and they sit and wait for the Holy Spirit or God to enter them. Now, Pepe, Joe G, if you want to send me an audio comment, I would be glad to put it on to clarify what a Quaker is. But, you know, better yet, my listeners should go to the Pepe podcast. But if you want to send like a 5-minute spiel about what Quakerism is, or 10 minutes, or 15 minutes, let me know and I'll put it up. So everybody knows what Quakers are, so I'm doing this correctly. But anyway, she talked about being a Quaker, but that when she was young, she sort of wanted the tradition. She sort of yearned for the tradition that Catholicism had and other groups. And she even said she went to catechism classes and was the best in the catechism class, even though in her home tradition of Quakerism, they don't require the Bible reading. This reminds me of when I was a kid, and when I was, you know, between 12 or 13, in fact, today's episode is all going to be about that period of time. I mean, it's all going to come from that period of time. Adolescence, the blooming of sexuality and thought. I wanted so badly to know about the Bible and go to a church and be involved with something like that. And because my family was not a church-related family, we didn't go to church. We didn't have any kind of tradition. Melanie had a tradition of Quakerism. We didn't have that. It was just very secular, I guess. And that's fine. But I was searching for something. And I think it's true probably for most kids that age. They want something. They have to do something. You know, they have to search for something. Whether it's church or religion or learning the stock market or whatever, I think they have to get involved. They have to have some solid understanding. So this, I was thinking about the fertile ground. Adolescents are fertile ground for those seeds that Christ, you know, throws down. And perhaps, or maybe it's not Christ, it's actually God, because he's just saying the seeds come down, but the seeds of the souls, maybe these seeds come down in us in various parts of our lives, and sometimes they fall on rocky people, and sometimes they fall on these shallow people, and that the soul grows so quickly it kills itself. But then there are some, and I'm thinking about the Quakers just sitting there so quietly. The soul comes down and buries itself deep inside these quiet people, not just Quakers, but anybody who's quiet. And the seed is there, and when the seed grows, I mean, there's a pattern, you know, it goes into the earth 6 or 7 inches, and it takes, you know, so many days for it to sprout, and it will grow roots, and it's in good soil, so it will be nourished. And that's the soul, you know. And what Christ is saying, not everybody, you know, is going to develop this divine spark because they're rocky kind of people. They don't allow themselves to have that soul, or the shallow ground where it just burns itself away. I mean, it has no roots. And however, for me, I think everybody has the opportunity to get a soul or get that seed in them. And I think it's always there, and it can come again, even though when you think it's gone, you can never really sell your soul. It's always there, and maybe it's the quietness that we need to discover that. But anyway, let's see here. Okay, sitting still, we're fertile ground. When it starts, I wrote this. When it starts growing, we seek information to understand its secrets, in that it is personal. When I was 12, I baptized myself in the shower, and inviting God to enter my heart, and I think He did. In comparison to my, in comparison, in comparison to, com, comparing that to my official baptism, where I knew that was wrong when I got officially baptized, I talked about that, and felt blinded afterwards, where that shower baptism when I was 12, I really felt this sort of sense of God entering me and saying, you know what, Ken, it's going to be all right. So that's what I've been thinking about Gnosticism and about this God or sparks in us. So what do you think?
When you rush around in hopeless circles, searching everywhere for something true, you're at the age of not believing, when all the make-believe is through. When you set aside your childhood heroes and your dreams are lost upon a shelf, you're at the age of not believing, and worst of all, you doubt yourself. You're a castaway where no one hears you, on a barren isle in a lonely sea. Did all the happy endings go? Where can all the good times be? You must face the age of not believing, doubting everything you ever knew, until at last you start believing there's something wonderful, truly wonderful in you.
The attic. I'm going to call this section the attic, and you'll soon find out. And it's all thanks to Madge Weinstein on Easter Radio, and in particular, Easter Radio episode 366, which was released on 4/20 this past week. I was at work listening to it. I had my iRivers working. Had my earbud in, just the one ear, mono. I was listening to it, and I was just thinking to myself, it was making me angrier and angrier and angrier. And what it basically boils down to is that Adam Curry and Howard Stern bandy around, I don't know if that's the right word to use the word fag. No, actually, Adam Curry doesn't use the word fag, but there was some sort of promotion where the word fag was used as an XM, as our bunch of fags. And apparently Howard Stern uses the word fag often. I've never listened to Howard Stern. I never listened to him when he was on radio. But let's say he did say it. Doesn't make a difference. The fact that it's used at all on radio, or even if it's satellite radio, I don't care if it's used on cable. And I know that's and I'm not trying to censor anybody, but I'll explain why it makes me angry. Madge Weinstein went on to say that there are thousands of kids, gay kids, who do commit suicide because of this kind of hate speech. Now, it's not necessarily hate speech to say fag. However, in this culture, you know, people know what a fag is. It dehumanizes. It dehumanizes a person, and it dehumanizes the person who is gay. It's just like saying nigger. That dehumanizes a person who is of you know, who is African American or African or whatever, black. I don't even know what to say because I'm, you know, it's just as bad. Or saying kike about a Jew dehumanizes honky. I'm a honky too, but I'm just saying. Gay kids have it different from straight kids because they don't have, nowadays kids are coming out earlier and they're going to proms and stuff, but you know, they put themselves at a very great risk. Now, when I was growing up, I knew I was gay, but it wasn't always easy. I mean, just because I knew I was gay doesn't mean it's easy. And I'm going to tell you about something that I have held in deep all these years. And because of this episode, I'm going to tell you. And I told John the other night, because I said I'm going to talk about this. Something very deep and dark. When I was growing up, there was a lot of whispering about me. And I think my parents knew I was gay. I mean, you know, especially at adolescence, I had pictures of Sean Cassidy on my wall. And, you know, I didn't do anything particularly gay. I mean, when you think about gay, I wasn't like a big queen, you know, with trying to dress up and stuff. I had a cousin once who said, I don't even know how this. This is why I think they knew I was gay and they talked about it. The cousin was like, I think gay people just want to be the opposite sex, so they should have a sex change operation. Because two men who have sex, that's disgusting. I'm thinking to myself, I'm 12. I'm like, you're not getting anywhere near my genitals, Sharita. You know. Well, this gave me this was disturbing. You know, not this. Also, what was disturbing was stuff I had read. Now, the Sherry Height report gave me great comfort because it was this sort of, you know. She wrote about homosexuality and gay as a natural thing, which it is, as I've said, and I will say again, and it is, and I'll say it till the end of time. It is. I'm made this way, probably for population control, if that is such a thing. I mean, who knows why things happen? They don't know how global warming really works or global dimming. You can't. There's too many variables. So this, you know, gay people are a natural part of the natural order. And to victimize gay people is just horrible. It's like victimizing anybody. Victimization is horrible. Anyway, I have to get on with my story because it's very, it's horrible. It's not really horrible, but you'll see. It's disturbing. So all this has gone on in my life. And in seventh grade, my best friend, at the end of the seventh grade, that was a whole new experience going to junior high. My best friend moved away. And we had a fight. And he moved away. And I didn't even know he moved away. And I went to his house. And he wasn't there. And so I started the... how'd this happen now? It must have been in seventh grade then. But there was a time, and it was in gym class, that, see, I keep on thinking, I'm going to tell you what happened, but, you know, it's hard for me to place whether it happened in the summer after seventh grade or eighth grade. It must have happened after the summer of eighth grade. So, okay, I went back to school alone. I didn't have any friends. I mean, I had knew some people, but not like my best buddy. We went bike riding and raked leaves and raised money and did all sorts of things. So the fall started. My father was a landscaper, and in the fall he did trees and stuff, and then he did plowing in the winter. Well, he broke his leg in the fall, which means he was out of work. And we had to go get food stamps, and we only had the food stamps for a few weeks before my father got out of the hospital, and he's like, "You're not doing food stamps." So we basically starved that year. And it was, I remember it was a horrible year. I think it was probably the Iran hostage crisis was going on. All these horrible things. And, of course, I'm a gay kid. I'm 13. Hormones are running through in my body. And it was the springtime, and I'm in gym class, and I come in to change, and these group of boys are around my locker, and they're spitting on my gym clothes. And I come over, and they stop spitting, and I took those. I just didn't do anything. I was so upset. And so they gave me this stare, this look like faggot. And so that was it. So soon after school went out, and I was lying in my bedroom, and I decided my family was out of the house. And so I went up into the attic. And I think initially, I don't know why I went up. I was like dead. I had this dead wooden feeling. It's just, you know, this feeling is like, what? Who the hell cares, you know, about anything? I'm gay. People hate me. You know, my best friend left. We're poor. I have no shoes. Well, I had shoes, but like I had the same pair of shoes for 2 years. And so I went up into the attic, and I'm sitting there. And I look over, and I see my father's hunting rifle. I don't think it was loaded, but it may have been. And I took it, and I stuck the rifle in my mouth. Now, I didn't go to the switch or whatever it's called, the revolver, but I put it in my mouth, I tasted it, and then I realized how stupid I was and how awful it was. I just cried and cried, and this all happened in a few seconds, you know, after I was up in the attic. And I remember the attic was very hot because it was unfinished. It was an unfinished attic, and there was a bed up there, actually just a mattress. And I was sitting on that at this time, sweating. So I ran downstairs into this coolness of the house, the rest of the house, into my room, which is in the back of the house, which is away from the sun. My cat, Jennifer, was in there. And I just cried and cried and cried. And I sat there, and this voice said to me, you know, you'll get out of here. You'll get out of this house. You'll get out of this situation. And so that's the time I wrote California on my wall, because I wanted to go to California so badly. It wasn't that I really wanted to go to California. Well, I really did want to go to California. To me, California was this place to go, you know, I don't know, maybe all my troubles would go away if I went to California. I knew California had homosexuals in it because everybody talked about, you know, San Francisco. I wanted to go to California. And I wrote California on my wall, and I cried, and I'd look at that. And that's what kept me, you know, actually centered for the rest of my high school years. But it's a terrible thing. And if there's gay kids out there, and people are talking about them and whispering behind their backs, and they hear fag casually used on the radio and stuff, you know what? It could lead somebody to pull the trigger. I know, because I had the rifle in my mouth. Anyone can whistle. That's what they say. Easy. Anyone can whistle. Any old day. Easy. It's so simple. Relax, let go, let fly. So someone tell me, why can't I can dance a tango, I can read Greek easy, I can slay a dragon any old week. Easy. What's hard is simple. What's natural comes hard. Maybe you can show me how to let go.
lower my guard. Learn to be free. Maybe if you whistle for me.
Activism. So, I've been angry. Not really angry, but I've been feeling a lot of emotions. And actually, it all has started since this is where it fits together, this podcast. On Easter, we have friends, Joy and Gail, who said they were going to give us some chocolates and stuff to John and I, because they have this chocolatier who makes chocolates. He's a private guy. He doesn't do it. He's a retired chocolatier, but he makes this really fabulous chocolate, and we've had some. So they said to us that they'll give us some chocolates. So Saturday night, we were watching 6 Feet Under, season 5 or whatever it is, the last season, which I'm telling you is emotionally draining. And maybe this is where all this emotion is coming from and where my soul is sort of waking up and becoming alive again, because I'm having feelings I've never had for many years, and I feel vulnerable and open and wonderful all at once. But anyway, I went to take Jose out because it was like this at the end of the episode. At the end of 6 Feet Under, it's just unbelievable. I had tears in my eyes. I cried. It was so really just unbelievable, but it's really great. So I went to go take the dog out, and I put the light on. There's this bag down there at the bottom of the steps. So I go down there, and it is like chocolate, the chocolate. And it had this little note, and it said, you know, had this card, and it said, "This is for Jose and the boys," that's us, and they said, "Go outside, and you'll find," in written in the card, "go outside, and you'll find, you know, there's, you know, treasures," right? So John and I went outside, and of course they had hidden Easter eggs in our yard, and it was really just great. It was 10 o'clock at night, and we were in our pajamas and Easter egg hunting. And it was really special. It was really nice. It was unexpected. And it just gave me the warmest feeling. And I wish everybody had this kind of feeling, because the world would be a lot better place. But after, you know, 9/11, I sort of just shut down. That was really terrifying. You know, I thought to myself, first of all, I thought, and I still do think, that the administration knew something about it. I don't trust them. And I thought it was going to go into martial law. I was ready to move to Canada. Let me tell you, that's how I felt. And he wasn't even in office for a year. And the more that the shit happens and this stuff goes on, it's worse than the McCarthy era. Because we just saw that Good Night and Good Luck movie. But anyway, it's important that we respond to things, especially when they're written in a public form like a newspaper. Now, there's a letter written in the Gloucester Daily Times, which I'll read to you, which I'm going to respond to. And I'm going to ask my listeners to listen to this and help me to formulate a letter. And then I'll post my response up. And if people want to use it as a template, go ahead. I recommend it, because you have to talk back. You have to talk back. You have to let people know. You can't let this, you know, it's okay. Christianity, for example, is being hijacked by this fundamentalist. It's like it's either you're this or you're not. And it's terrible. And I'm tired of politics being hijacked. I'm tired of my rights being hijacked. I'm tired of everything being hijacked by this group of fundamentalists. And I'm not going to call them Christians either, because they're hardly Christian in my eyes. So, anyway. Here is the letter to the editor that this guy wrote, Mr. Dean Burgess of Summer Street, Manchester, Massachusetts. To the editor, after reading... Okay, I'm going to read the whole thing. After reading Mr. Westerhoff's letter of complaint regarding the petition to ban gay marriage signature collection at a private school, I felt compelled to remind Mr. Westerhoff of what happened at our public school here in Manchester. Now, what I'm about to say is not just to inflame, but it is the truth, and the truth must be revealed. I remember back last April that the Times ran an article that reported a pro-gay affiliated political organization organized a petition drive within the public high school walls during school hours that allowed minors to petition their government to approve of same-sex marriage. Now, the truth is that the high school administration had to approve of this drive, and school faculty and public tax dollars were used to help this petition drive. Now, as much as that might bother some people, what really bothered me was why wasn't a petition to ban gay marriage made available for the students at the same time, whose moral values did not agree with same-sex marriage. I'll let the people decide for themselves on that one. This is, okay, the next three paragraphs is his cum shot. I also wonder why it is that if someone like me, whose moral values are set against same-sex marriage, they are automatically labeled as a person of hate. I am not about to Bible thump, but I am Roman Catholic, and I will never change my moral values just for the mere sake of making other people happy. Why is it that you never hear from the gay and lesbian community that they will tolerate and accept our Christian moral values? Why is it that Christian parents are labeled as people of hate if we teach our children Christian values? Why are we the ones who are labeled as prejudiced when the other side does not tolerate what we believe? What are we teaching our children when we tell them that they must accept another's lifestyle and give up all their religious beliefs as if they don't? And if they don't, they'll be labeled as people of hate and prejudice. Why is it that Christians are labeled as anti-family when we disapprove of abortion as a form of birth control? And the liberals of this commonwealth say it is a constitutionally protected right. I don't get it. An innocent unborn child is allowed to be murdered, and that should be the question of what we are teaching our children. Dean Burgess. Now, I have been, as I read this, it helps me because I get to think of responses. Now, there's two parts to this. The first part talks about the school. I don't think any kind of political action group should be allowed in any school. First of all, the children can't vote. So, you know, they should learn about this stuff. But I don't believe that any pro or con, those people should stay away from the schools. That's the way I think about it. He also talks about this pro-gay affiliated political organization, something that happened in April of 2005. And I couldn't find one shred of evidence that anything like that ever happened. So I'm going to have to bring that to his attention. And so let's go into the second – let's answer his questions. I also wonder why it is that if someone like me, whose moral values are set against same-sex marriage, are automatically labeled as a person of hate. Well, I do not automatically label this person as a person of hate. I don't – just because they don't believe in same-sex marriage, I don't think they're hate-filled. Do you? No. That, you know what? If they don't want to have – you know, their morals pertain to themselves. So if they don't want to have same-sex marriage, if they don't want to marry another man or a woman or whatever they are, that's fine. You know? I'm not – you know, who cares? I don't care what they do in their house. He goes on to say, I'm not going to Bible thump, but I'm a Roman Catholic, which means he has to Bible thump. And I will never change my moral values. Or I am a Roman Catholic and I will never change my moral values for the sake of making other people happy. Well, I don't want you to change your moral values, Mr. Burgess. You know, you can do whatever you want in your own home or, you know, with your relatives. I don't care. Why is it that we never hear from the gay or lesbian community Why is it that you never hear from the gay and lesbian community that they will tolerate and accept our Christian moral values? Well, okay, this is Mr. Burgess. Christianity, Christians and gays and lesbians are not mutually exclusive, okay? That is one thing. So, and not all gays are Christians, not all gays and lesbians are Christians on the same note. There are different people. There are Muslims. There are Buddhists. There are Jews. There are Christians. There are even fundamentalist Christian gays. Can you believe it? There are Catholic gays. Can you believe that, Mr. Burgess? So to say that the gay and lesbian community does not tolerate your Christian moral values, you don't even, you know, what moral values? That we shouldn't get married? That's not a moral value. That's a position. That's a political position. Now let's just say about this marriage business. This is something that is secular, is part of the state. It is a civil right, not a church right. You can do whatever you like in your church. You know, there should be no law that forces you to marry anybody inside your Catholic church or whatever church you belong to. You can do whatever you like in your church. But when you start bringing it into government, when you start changing laws to reflect your religious morals, that's when I have a problem. And that's when I'm going to get involved and others like me are going to get involved. And like our early American flag will say it best, don't tread on me, because if you do, I'm going to bite your heel. Okay. Why is it that Christian parents are labeled people of hate when they teach their children Christian values? Okay, that is, you know what, people are not labeling Christian people as people of hate. What they are, when people say Christians are hateful, it's not that you can't just say Christians are hateful. What you're talking about is actually specific people. There may be a group of people like Fred Phelps. Are you Fred Phelps' supporter, Mr. Burgess? Fred Phelps is hate-filled. He says God hates fags. That is hateful. Plain and simple. Do you hate fags? You know what? Okay, you can hate fags. Hate them in your own house. But I don't want to hear it. Why are we the ones who are labeled as prejudiced when the other side does not tolerate what we believe? I tolerate what you believe. I've tolerated what you've believed for a long fucking time. Now I've had it up to here, and I want to do something about it. Because I've tolerated you probably too long to my own chagrin or to my own downfall. If I tolerated you long enough, I would be, you know, I wouldn't have stand a chance in hell if I tolerated you any longer. Next thing you know, you're going to make it criminal to be gay, and you're going to hang us. How's that? Or stick us in a Nazi oven, you Nazi. I have tolerated long enough, and I'm tired of being tolerant. Now it's time to draw the line in the sand and fight. Okay, I can't even go any further, but you've listened to it. I need your input. I need arguments, and I don't need just arguments of yelling out and saying he's hate-filled or he's a Nazi, because that's not right. I want to make a legal argument. I want something so solid that he can't possibly respond. I want him stuttering and muttering in his Catholic church. I'm so angry. I'm so angry because I had a rifle in my mouth and this faggot is talking shit. He's a faggot.
Bell'alma innamorata, ti rivolgi a me placata, eco ascenda il tuo fedele.
And now for the original performance of Here by that spectacular Michael Herron from Mikey Pot on the Bayou podcast.
I see the writing on a different wall. These toothless wishes, these sweet impressions. And every jump is closer to a fall. Is this September or just October? Am I falling here forever? Something keeps me distant. I stay awake and keep this in it. And never, ever, never disappointed. And never looking out into the distance. Never talking or keeping quiet. So I'm here. these are all the words I'm after. God, give me something to remember.
You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at 206-339-JOSE, or you can reach me at kenty@theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.